Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Kim Small, CEO of Signs of Hope, which stands for Healing, Options, Prevention, and Education. The organization's annual Night Out fundraiser is coming up in a few days at the Venetian. Kim, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather, for having me.
So for those who don't know the organization, what is Signs of Hope?
Signs of Hope is a nonprofit organized and dedicated to offering hope, help, and healing to those affected by sexual violence and exploitation. We've been around for 50 years. We started in the kitchen of our founder, Florence McClure and Sandra Petta, formerly the Community Action Against Rape. We're now Signs of Hope. We have two crisis hotlines, one dedicated for sexual assault and the other dedicated for human trafficking. We have our RISE division, which is focusing on sexual trafficking as well as labor trafficking. In addition, we offer prevention, education, and outreach into the community so we can educate the community on what to look for and how to respond. And also, we have our counseling department where our therapists offer crisis therapy for those in need.
Wow, that's awesome. So obviously the organization has changed a lot over those five decades, but how have the sexual assault and human trafficking landscapes as a whole changed during that time?
I think now there's being paid more attention to both. Unfortunately, we haven't come as far as we'd like with sexual assault. There is still a very small percentage of prosecution of perpetrators of sexual assault, 2-3%. And so although we've made great strides, we are still behind on making great advancement in prosecuting sexual predators. In the human trafficking realm, I think what we have seen is we're breaking that myth that you're kidnapped, thrown into the van, and taken somewhere. It's never as cookie cutter as that. We're seeing it happen in different ways, in grooming. So it's not one prescribed method of sex trafficking. We're seeing also an uptick in labor trafficking as well. So I think that before, the community didn't know that sexual assault and human trafficking existed. I think they know now that it exists, but there still needs to be more education on these two violent crimes.
Yeah. Now, I understand how human trafficking can seem like one of those, you know, mythological things that happens somewhere out there, but not in my neighborhood, not to people I know. You know, people don't necessarily encounter that on a day-to-day basis. But sexual assault, I mean, I think that's been in the spotlight for a long time now. So only 2-3% prosecution. That seems super low. Why is it so low?
It does. Sometimes it ends in deals that are made. They don't go to court. And also, you know, it's hard for people to come forward because you just don't know who's doing the assaulting. They don't think that they'll be believed. There's so many stereotypes around. We call it the rape culture. And the questions that are asked, you know, what are you wearing? Where were you? You were intoxicated. Why were you there? You're re-victimizing the victim. And so they don't want to go through that trauma. But those that do go through the judicial system, you know, sometimes it's disheartening when the perpetrator will take a plea. And that's as far as it'll go. And I can't quite verbalize why it is so low other than there's still some strides that need to be made in the judicial process, such as educating judges on rape culture and educating still the community and also the attorneys. You know, like I said, they're re-victimized when they're on the stand, and we don't want that. We do everything we can possible to not have that happen to our client survivors.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So tell us about the upcoming Night Out fundraiser.
So we're excited on December 11th. Tao, the Venetian, will once again host our night out. It is a fundraiser for us to raise money for more awareness for our agency, but also we're going to be celebrating some of our partners like MJ Maynard from the Regional Transportation Commission of Southern Nevada, RTC, and Lori Nelson Kraft, the Senior Vice President of Public Affairs, Formula One, Las Vegas Grand Prix. We are very fortunate to have those two women coming to represent the partners that we work with on a day-to-day basis. RTC, especially, they provide bus passes for our clients to get to work, to get to counseling sessions, to get to safety. And Formula One came, gave us money for the work that we did during Formula One when we were out with Metro for several days, being the first responders. We're also celebrating Bryce Clark, who's the Vice President Event Operations at Tao Group Hospitality, as well as celebrating Tao Group Hospitality for their continued support of Signs of Hope and Night Out.
Nice. Okay. So it's December 11th at Tao Nightclub inside the Venetian. What time does it happen?
5 to 7, right after work. Come on over and join us. And unfortunately, tickets are sold out online, but if you come, we're going to have tickets at the door.
Okay. Awesome. And what's the Hope for the Holidays theme all about?
Well, it ties into our name, Hope. It's themed as Hope for the Holidays because we know holidays are hard for a lot of people, not just for our clients, but it's hard for a lot of people. And providing hope, and it's a play off of our name as well, but providing hope through the holidays and being there for those that need us is truly important to us.
Yeah, definitely. Now you mentioned some of the people who are being honored. What else can people expect if they attend the fundraiser?
So we have our drinks and appetizers, networking, and really just a time to join together and just for us to show our thanks to our community. So, delicious appetizers, great cocktails, entertainment, and just the opportunity to participate in our silent auction as well as our wine pool, which is a big hit every year. So we're excited to see our partners come together and just kind of kick off the holiday season with us.
What kind of entertainment are you featuring, and what are some of the silent auction items?
We're going to have a DJ. I don't know exactly which DJ. Tao's very gracious in providing a DJ for us, and the DJ is always nice to provide their time pro bono. But some of the silent auction items are trips, VGK tickets, experiences, dining experiences, spa. So we're kind of covering it all this time.
Okay, perfect. Now you mentioned tickets are sold out online. People can get them at the door, though. Where can listeners go if they want to find out more information about Signs of Hope in general, or maybe support you in another way, such as making a donation or volunteering?
Oh, yes, they can go to our website anytime, SOHLV.org. Please go to our website, learn more about us. We are always accepting monetary donations, but we also need volunteers to staff our hotline. We had a volunteer come in today and help us with organizing our storage closets. So there's different opportunities for volunteers, outreach opportunities where we have our volunteers in the community at a booth for us talking about Signs of Hope and sharing information. So volunteers are priceless.
Awesome. Okay. So once again, the website SOHLV.org, that stands for Signs of Hope Las Vegas, SOHLV.org. You can find out more about the organization, what they do in our community. You can sign up as a volunteer. They need volunteers to staff the hotline, do outreach, take care of various tasks. And if you want to make a donation, of course, you can do that there as well. Now, the Night Out fundraiser with Hope for the Holidays theme is taking place on Wednesday, December 11th, Wednesday coming up from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. inside Tao Nightclub at the Venetian Resort. And you cannot get tickets online anymore, but you can get tickets at the door. So that's on Wednesday from 5 to 7, Wednesday, December 11th from 5 to 7 at Tao inside the Venetian Resort. And we've been speaking today with Kim Small. She's the CEO of Signs of Hope, and that stands for Healing, Options, Prevention, and Education. And they do so much great work in our community, helping survivors of sexual assault and human trafficking. Kim, it's really great talking to you and finding out, first of all, the difference that you're making in the community, the things that you're doing, how you're giving hope to those survivors of sexual assault and human trafficking, and about the Night Out fundraiser that's coming up that seems like so much fun, and of course, raising money for such a great cause. So thank you so much for sharing today.
Heather, thank you for this opportunity. It's always a pleasure.
This is McGruff the Crime Dog, and I need you to help me take a bite out of crime. Another teenager, victim to fake pills bought from social media. This doesn't seem like a drug deal, but it definitely is. Should buying prescription pills be that easy? Many fake pills contain fentanyl, and an amount small enough to fit on the tip of a pencil can be lethal. So listen, before buying pills from social media, think again. Learn more at McGruffPSA.org and go for real. Brought to you by USPTO and the National Crime Prevention Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Glenn Simpson, Senior Director of Specialty Care at Community Ambulance. Every holiday season, Community Ambulance deals with the struggles of emergency response, but you can prepare for increased traffic and potential roadside emergency situations that come with these heavy traffic conditions. Glenn, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
So we see your vehicles all over the road, but what exactly is Community Ambulance?
Yeah, so Community Ambulance is a locally owned ambulance company here that probably serves Southern Nevada. We're responsible for roughly about three quarters of the 911 calls that are produced every single day and every single year in Clark County. And then we back up response in the city of Henderson. So a very busy organization, a little over 700 providers that are out there responding to these 911 calls every single day, as well as supporting all the big, large events of all sizes that come to Las Vegas and make us the entertainment capital of the world.
Yeah. Okay. How does demand for your services change during the holiday season?
Yeah, you know, as many of our listeners likely know, it seems like every weekend, the size of our city just grows. And then with the holidays, as we kind of, you know, get out of the summer and things cool off, we start to see more people come to our city. And whether that's people visiting the Strip, whether that's people coming to town for, you know, National Finals Rodeo or any other large event, we tend to see more people come to our city, and more people tends to equate to more calls for service. And so for us, it's just a, you know, it's a reminder that we're there, we're available, and we're excited to see people come to our city.
Yeah. And on top of that, of course, during the holidays, people are celebrating. What sorts of DUI incidents do you see during the holiday season?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're certainly no stranger to people getting on the road that are intoxicated. And it doesn't change necessarily in the wintertime. It doesn't change during the holidays. As a matter of fact, unfortunately, we see more DUI related incidences. And as you can imagine, you know, it affects so many people when you choose to get behind the wheel and think, you know, for example, that you're not intoxicated, but in fact, you are. And not only does it affect the other people that are involved, it even affects our first responders. You know, at the end of the day, every day we go out to serve our community, to take care of those that need us at their moment of need. And it's certainly, you know, every call that we run, including, you know, a DUI related incident that may result in death, makes an impact on our providers. And so whether that's us, whether it's other first responders in the community, the rippling effect, the family of the loved one that loses their life, it's something that, you know, we cannot stress enough. There are so many options out there for you, whether that's rideshare, whether that's picking up the phone, calling a friend, whatever that is, the resources are available. There's many organizations that take part in offering free rides. There's many organizations that offer, you know, the ability to leave your car where it's at and ensure that it's safe so that you can pick it up when you're sober. And so we just, you know, it's something we're very passionate about. It's something that we can't stress enough. Please, please, please do not get behind the wheel if you are under the influence.
Yeah, definitely good advice. Now, how big of a risk are car fires when we're traveling long distances?
Yeah, you know, with holidays come people that tend to hit the road as opposed to, you know, flying. And, you know, each year we see more people that tend to go that way. Not too long ago this year, we played witness to, you know, a major artery in and out of Las Vegas, the I-15, getting shut down for an extended period of time because of a lithium battery truck that caught fire. And so we saw the effects of that. We saw what that can do to that main artery. And for us, it's about being prepared. It's being prepared for those situations. It's being prepared for being, you know, stuck on the road for, you know, we saw it a very long time with nowhere to go and almost in a situation where you're stranded and where you're stuck out there. And so that car fire can easily take place, you know, in your vehicle. And so, again, it's a reminder that, you know, if you are planning for travel on the road, get your car in, get your car service, you know, make sure your car is road ready, road worthy, so that you can safely make it to your destination.
How can we limit the risk of car fires, whether it's from overheating or faulty wiring? I mean, of course, taking it in to have it looked at is a great idea, but what are some things that we can do ourselves?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, that's probably the best piece of advice is making sure that the car is ready to hit the road. But in the event that, you know, whether it is faulty wires, you know, whatever it is that may cause that fire, it's really important that you protect yourself first and foremost. If you can safely pull to the side of the road and then get out of the vehicle, get out, you know, don't worry about those possessions such as, you know, your luggage, maybe gifts, whatever that is, your life and any of the lives of the vehicle in that car are far more important than any other object that may be in that vehicle. And often we see that. We see people wanting to gather up all their property and, you know, whatever that may be. And the reality is your life is not replaceable. The other items in your car tend to be replaceable, but not your life or the other lives of the individuals that may be in that car.
Yeah. Okay. Now, besides the things we've talked about, the DUI, the risk of car fires, there's also the chance, of course, that depending how far we're going, we could run into snowy road conditions. So all of that in mind, what kind of roadside emergency kits should we keep in our cars to be prepared?
Yeah, you know, a lot of us may not travel long distances on a regular basis, and so we may not carry some of the items. But, you know, for us, it's very important that when you do hit the road and, you know, if you end up getting stranded or you end up getting stuck or to your point, you know, there's a mountain pass that's closed because of weather, it's really important that you have some supplies in your vehicle. And we talk about, you know, first and foremost, having a first aid kit, whether that's for you personally, whether, you know, you may be in a position to be able to help somebody. And when we talk first aid kit, you know, a standard first aid kit that you can pick up from, you know, your local pharmacy, a local store, just to have that available in the event, you know, that some of those supplies are needed. In addition, if your car becomes a hazard, carrying reflective triangles so that, you know, if you are pulled to the side of the road, you're able to place those. And so oncoming traffic, it makes you more visible, which in turn is much safer. Having flashlights, right? When we're traveling long distance on highways, we all know that those highways, you know, they tend to be dark and they're not lit whatsoever or very poorly lit. Making sure that you have a fire extinguisher. You know, the reality is we need to stay prepared. We never know when we might break down. We never know when we may be in an accident or be stopped in traffic because of an accident that's ahead that may take, you know, several hours to clear. And so, you know, little tips like making sure you pack enough non-perishable snacks, making sure that you have, depending on, you know, where you may be driving to, what the climate is like, making sure you have extra blankets so that, you know, you're not going to want to run your car for an extended period of time if you're just stuck in traffic, but you're going to want to be able to make sure that, you know, you keep everybody in the car warm, for example. So those are just a few of the items that we definitely recommend to have available for yourself and for others that you may come across.
Yeah, some fantastic tips there. Okay, so where can our listeners go for more information about how to stay safe for the holiday season?
Yeah, you can definitely check out our website, communityambulance.com. You can also check us out on pretty much every social media channel. You can find us by searching for Community Ambulance. We tend to spend a lot of time really just kind of putting out small little public service announcements, taking opportunities to educate the public. And sometimes it's not even just about education. Sometimes it's just a reminder. And that's what we're here to do. And we definitely encourage everyone to have a safe, joyous holiday, wherever you may be doing, whoever you may be spending the time with, or maybe you just stay here in our backyard. But we wish everyone a safe and happy holiday.
Awesome. Okay. So once again, that website is communityambulance.com, communityambulance.com. You can also find Community Ambulance on all the social media platforms. They share information, tips like we've talked about today, how to stay safe, how to make sure that you and your family are safe, especially during the holiday season, but all year round, of course, communityambulance.com. And we've been speaking today with Glenn Simpson. He's the Senior Director of Specialty Care at Community Ambulance. And Glenn, you know, some really important topics that you've brought up today and some really fantastic tips that I know anyone listening can get a lot out of, as well as the tips and information that you offer online. So thank you so much for sharing today.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Commissioner Kenneth Hodder, National Commander for the Salvation Army, along with Alexa and Carlos Penavega, married actors and celebrity volunteers for the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army's famous annual Red Kettle campaign is underway for the holiday season. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thanks, Heather. It's great to be with you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
So, Commissioner Hodder, we've all heard of the organization, but what exactly does the Salvation Army do?
The Salvation Army has a simple mission statement: to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and meet human needs in His name without discrimination. So, Heather, the Salvation Army will do whatever a local community needs to have done. And that's certainly true in Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, the Salvation Army serves more than 1 million meals every year and provides more than 80,000 nights of lodging. Whatever the need is in Las Vegas, I know that Harold and Magali Laubach work very hard to meet it. So the Salvation Army is a means by which individuals can help their neighbors in their own community, wherever they live.
Nice. Okay. And what's the Red Kettle campaign?
Well, the Red Kettle campaign, of course, is an iconic part of Christmas, 134 years this year. And the Red Kettle campaign is the means by which people can help their local communities give people a hand up into the future. I know that the Red Kettle campaign is a means of giving. It's a means of community involvement. It's a means of togetherness. It's a focal point for giving at our website, salvationarmyusa.org. It's a means by which people learn about the Angel Tree program. The Red Kettle is key to all of it, so we hope everyone will get involved.
Carlos and Alexa, what have you both been doing in your work with the Salvation Army?
Well, we have watched the Red Kettle be a part of our youth, you know, seeing the Red Kettles everywhere. But for us now, the Army has showed up for our communities in need. We lived in Lahaina when the fire swept through and the Army was there. When we were living in Florida after one of the hurricanes, their emergency disaster services, they were also there. And it's just amazing how they show up all throughout the U.S. for communities in need. Something that we love, like we believe in family and unity and community, and we want to teach our kids the power of giving back and the importance of it. So we bring our kids with us to some of these volunteer efforts, and it has been incredible to see what it's done for them at such a young age, because we need to teach people the importance of giving back because our communities are in need.
So are you guys out there standing with the Red Kettle?
We have been standing with the Red Kettle, but also during just recently, we went to Mountain City, Tennessee, and we handed out over 500 meals after Hurricane Helene. And we were there serving and working together with the communities, providing emotional and spiritual support and care. There are so many different ways that you can volunteer with the Salvation Army, which makes it so incredible. So if you don't have necessarily the means to give financially, you can give your time as well.
Nice. Now, Commissioner Hodder, you mentioned the Angel Tree program. What's that all about?
The Angel Tree is a means by which people can provide a toy to a child who wouldn't otherwise have one at Christmas. And we hear all kinds of stories about folks who have benefited from this program. People will go to a tree in a mall or at a store or at their local Walmart, and they can take an angel off the tree. They buy that toy. They return it to the Salvation Army's location, and we're able to get that toy to that child. There is nothing more heartwarming than recognizing that you've helped a child experience the magic of Christmas. So the angel tree is all about that magic in a child's life.
And obviously the Salvation Army does a lot around the holiday season, but how do you meet the needs of local communities beyond the holidays?
Well, the Salvation Army helps about 27 million people every year in every zip code of the nation. And the Salvation Army will do, as I suggested earlier, anything that that community needs to have done. For some, it's youth programs. For others, it's senior programs. We have veterans programs. We have music and character building programs, the food, the shelter, the clothing, the drug and alcohol recovery. All of these things are Salvation Army programs because we want to address all of the needs of every person who comes in our door.
Okay, awesome. And Carlos and Alexa, what would you like people to know about supporting the Salvation Army this time of year or any time of year?
Well, we've been partnered, I think it's going on maybe 5 years. I got to figure out the exact number, but they are the real deal. Every year, like Alexa said, we do a little bit more and a little more. And seeing the people behind the scenes and seeing the heart behind the scenes and actually seeing where the funds are being delivered, it's been so beautiful to know that this organization is actually doing good work, because there are a lot out there that, people have feelings about, but Salvation Army, we stand behind them 100%. And there's so many people out there that need love, need help. And we as a world, we need to be doing that work, and the Salvation Army is doing that work, and we stand by them. And yeah, we're just excited to be here, and Salvation Army, let's go.
Awesome. So, Commissioner Hodder, where can listeners get more information on the Salvation Army and how to support the local Salvation Army, either through the physical Red Kettle location or by other means of support?
Well, Heather, we would encourage everyone to go to salvationarmyusa.org. That's the location where they can find out about everything the Army is doing where they live and about how they can be a part of changing someone else's life.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, that website, salvationarmyusa.org, salvationarmyusa.org. You can find out what the Salvation Army is doing right here in the Las Vegas community and across the country. You can find out where the Red Kettle locations are, or if you happen to see one of those famous Red Kettles out on the street with a Salvation Army person there standing with the Red Kettle, go ahead and make a donation there as well. And Commissioner Cotter, does that have to be a cash donation?
No, ma'am, it does not. You'll find that all of our signs have QR codes. Folks can use Google Pay, Apple Pay. They can bump the sign. They can give Bitcoin or Ethereum or cash or credit, whatever they choose. The Salvation Army has adapted to all the modern payment systems. So we just invite folks to stop by the kettle and help brighten someone's Christmas and someone's 2025.
Perfect. So either look for those big red kettles on the street or go to salvationarmyusa.org. And we've been speaking today with Commissioner Kenneth Hodder. He's the National Commander for the Salvation Army, and also Alexa and Carlos Penavega, married actors, celebrity volunteers for the Salvation Army who get their kids involved in the process as well. Thank you all so much for being here today, sharing the message of the Salvation Army and what you do for the communities. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Heather.
Merry Christmas.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Catherine Wallman, founder and CEO of the Family Heart Foundation, and Dr. Larry Sperling, Chief Medical Officer. The organization has launched a free screening and personalized support initiative that gives people a chance to get tested and find out more about the risks of cardiovascular disease. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yes, thank you for having us.
So, Catherine, what exactly is the Family Heart Foundation?
The Family Heart Foundation is a public charity that is focused on empowering individuals to understand their risk of cardiovascular disease, especially inherited risk factors. And we do research, advocacy, and a lot of direct support to individuals across the United States.
Awesome. Okay. Dr. Sperling, how common is cardiovascular disease?
Heather, this is a really important question for your listeners. Cardiovascular disease and stroke are very common. In fact, most Americans are at risk for these conditions. I'm a preventive cardiologist. I've dedicated my career to heart disease prevention. And during the course of our interview, at least 10 Americans will die of heart disease. What's really important is that 80% or more of heart-related events are preventable. And prevention starts with awareness of our heart disease risk factor.
Okay, what are some of those risk factors?
There's a core of heart risk factors. Today, we're here to talk about two important risk factors, LDL cholesterol. And we know by lowering our LDL cholesterol, we can lower our heart-related risk. The other risk factor is called lipoprotein little a or LP little a. And most people, and in fact, most clinicians are not aware of Lp(a). Lp(a), it's a genetic factor, and one out of every five people in the world have a high Lp(a). Lp(a) we call the triple threat because it increases the risk of inflammation, plaque developing in our blood vessels, and blood clotting. Each and every one of your listeners can be empowered with approaching their heart disease risk by knowledge. And the good news is, by a simple blood test, they can measure their LDL cholesterol and Lp(a), and there's something they can do to improve their risk as well as the members of their family.
Okay. So, Catherine, how is the Family Heart Foundation working to fight this epidemic through what Dr. Sperling's talking about?
So, Heather, what we see in our research is a little bit shocking. So there are over 70 million Americans that look as though their LDL cholesterol is going uncontrolled, despite the fact that in today there are so many therapies and things that you can do to reduce your LDL cholesterol, which is definitely a driver of atherosclerosis. The other thing that we find is that less than 5% of Americans have ever been screened for Lp(a), even though it is so common. So what we're doing as an organization is trying to not only raise awareness, but offer individuals, regardless of their insurance or where they live in the United States, to have the opportunity to empower themselves through a simple blood test at home and support by a care navigator at the Family Heart Foundation to know what their levels of these two risk factors are, and then to plan next steps.
Okay. Dr. Sperling, how can people prevent heart disease once they do know their risk?
Yeah, heart disease can be prevented. And by prevention, it starts with awareness, but awareness should activate one to partner with their physician, their clinical team, to have a conversation not only about their heart risk, but what can they do about it. So heart risk factors can be treated. And even if we have genetic risk factors, we can really make a big difference in our genetic risk by addressing a risk factor like our LDL cholesterol, awareness of Lp(a). And these are actionable steps each and every one of us can take.
So how does the whole process work?
So certainly anyone can go to their physician and request that their LDL be screened for, which it probably already has been. They may not know the results, but also ask for an Lp(a) test, or they can go to cholesterolconnect.org and they'll read a lot of information about these two risk factors, and they can sign up for a free test and then take those results to their physician. And as Dr. Sperling said, partner with them to see what their next steps personally would be based on other risk factors as well.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Catherine, what's your personal journey and connection to the cause?
So, Heather, I had a heart attack at the age of 39, and it was really devastating to me and my family, but I feel so blessed, honestly, to have made it to the other side of that. And what I discovered was there was so much I could have done had I known that I had these two, I had two genetic conditions. One, familial hypercholesterolemia, which causes very high LDL cholesterol. And the other, elevated lipoprotein little a, which is primarily genetic in everyone. And so this is truly a heartfelt mission for me. Both of my children have inherited at least one of these disorders. And what's so exciting, though, is that even though cardiovascular disease does remain the number one cause of death, there are things that people can do. The first step is to understand their risk. And then there are medications as well as lifestyle changes that people can take on, and they can give themselves decades more of healthy life.
That's fantastic. Okay, so you did mention the website, but where can people go for more information or to start the process with a free screening test?
People can go to cholesterolconnect.org, and there they'll find all the information they need. They can also go to familyheart.org, which is our main website, and we have care navigators who they can pick up the phone and talk to if they have questions.
Nice. Okay. So those websites, once again, familyheart.org is the main website for the Family Heart Foundation, familyheart.org. You can connect with someone. You can find out more information. If you're interested in taking the Cholesterol Connect test, it's a free screening test you can take to your physician, cholesterolconnect.org. You can find out more about LDL cholesterol and LP little a, the genetic factor they've been talking about today, cholesterolconnect.org. And we've been speaking today with Catherine Weilman, founder and CEO of the Family Heart Foundation, and Dr. Larry Sperling, chief medical officer of the Family Heart Foundation. And I really appreciate you both being here and raising awareness about this cause, how prevalent it is, what people can do about it, and offering this free resource is absolutely fantastic. So thank you both so much.
Thank you. Yes.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Sue Peschen, President and CEO of the Alliance for Aging Research. An estimated 54,000 people in Nevada are currently living with Alzheimer's, and 84,000 in the state are caring for people with Alzheimer's or other dementias. A new poll commissioned in part by the Alliance for Aging Research shows an overwhelming bipartisan demand for improving access to innovative FDA-approved early treatments. Sue, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
So what are the barriers that prevent Alzheimer's patients from accessing drugs to slow the disease's progression?
Yes. So in 2022, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which runs the Medicare program, set up a unique utilization management barrier for these FDA-approved drugs that treat early Alzheimer's disease. And they had never done this before for on-label use of a prescription drug. And what they did was they used a tool that they created themselves called coverage with evidence development. And even though the FDA said these drugs are safe and effective for use in the clinical setting, CMS, which is essentially a payer, Medicare is a public insurance program, is sort of second guessing FDA and saying, we're going to require collection of evidence. So we're going to make folks jump through a few extra hoops in order to get access to these therapies. So folks can still go to their doctors and ask whether or not they're eligible, but it's just a little bit more limited in terms of the types of doctors and the places where you can get the medications.
What are some of these new treatments that have an extra barrier in place now?
So there are two, and one of them is called Kisunla, and the other one is Leqembi. And they're both treatments for early Alzheimer's disease that were approved in the last couple of years by the FDA. These are not curative therapies, but they are disease modifying. They're the very first disease modifying therapies to be approved for Alzheimer's disease, which that means basically they can delay decline. And that's really important to a lot of families because it allows folks to be independent for a bit longer and to be more themselves for a little bit longer. And every day is important. It's estimated that about 2,000 folks progress out of the early phase a day. So people who aren't able to get access, you know, get out of that window where the drugs would otherwise be beneficial.
And what are some of the hoops that they would have to jump through in order to get access to the medicines?
Well, they have to be willing to participate in a clinical study, which these drugs have already gone through clinical study. And like I said, you know, were approved by the FDA, but Medicare added this additional barrier. So they have to agree and their doctor has to agree to input information every several months into these registries. And then those registries are used in clinical studies to analyze the data over time. And they have to agree to participate. So if they're not comfortable with that, or if, you know, they're not able to get to a clinician that's participating in one of these registries, then they have to either pay out of pocket or they're out of luck.
Wow. Okay. Now, what are some of the key highlights revealed in your recent poll about this issue?
Yeah, I mean, overwhelmingly and really across the political spectrum, which makes this really like a core issue, everybody agrees that Medicare should immediately cover the cost of these FDA-approved drugs. We had 89% of voters who said that, and about 78% said the government should not require patients to participate in medical research studies on any FDA-approved drug in order to get access. And that if Medicare doesn't change this, 78% agree Congress should step in to require Medicare to do it.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that this was the first time these types of barriers have been put in place. So what kind of precedent does keeping them in place set for others living with chronic conditions, maybe other chronic conditions?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're really concerned about, is it really has opened up this doorway. And spokespeople for the Medicare program and researchers who support the work that they're doing around this have even said that we're likely to see more of these on new types of gene therapies and stem cell therapies in the years to come for other types of conditions like cancers, rare diseases. So this will not be a one-off.
Some of this is obvious, but what are some of the ways that limited access to treatment could cause harm, not only to patients, but their families and our economy as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, you want, hopefully, you know, your loved ones to be able to stay home as long as possible. And the faster the disease progresses without any type of intervention, the more likely folks are to need institutionalization, to need extra help as they progress along. It's very costly for families to take care of their loved ones at home. My mom has Alzheimer's, and it's a strain on both of us financially, emotionally. And, you know, it's not easy to always find help and extra care, you know, to supplement. So there's a lot of issues around this disease. And I'm very blessed that she's with me. I think a lot of families feel the same way. But, you know, we need support. And to have the public program of Medicare, which we all pay into as taxpayers, sort of cherry pick this disease and say, too bad, there's too many of you, we want to try to save costs. That's not fair. And that's not what you expect when you get older and you get sick.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can listeners go to learn more about this issue or make their voices and opinions heard?
Absolutely. Visit us at agingresearch.org. We have a lot of information on Alzheimer's and a number of other chronic conditions as well as more background on this issue. And if you're looking for support in your local area, visit the Alzheimer's Association at alz.org, and they can connect you with your local chapter.
Nice. Okay. So once again, those websites are agingresearch.org. You can find out more information on chronic conditions. You can find out about these barriers that are in place for early Alzheimer's patients, agingresearch.org. And if you're looking for resources for a loved one who has Alzheimer's, ALZ.org. That's the Alzheimer's Association, ALZ.org. And we've been speaking today with Sue Peschen. She's the president and CEO of the Alliance for Aging Research. And Sue, it's really great that you're here bringing, first of all, more information to people who weren't aware about the issue and also coming with verified opinions from other people who have spoke up about the issue. It's a bipartisan issue. It's not something that is specifically one political party or another. It's people across various demographics who agree that patients should have access to these treatments. So thank you so much for being here today and sharing information about it with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Heather.
Mom's early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
And when I left the oven on, we decided together that it was time to see a doctor and make a plan.
Early detection gave us more time to seek out information and support as a family.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Brian Connell, Vice President of Federal Affairs at the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, or LLS. New legislation could save Medicare patients over $1,500 annually on cancer treatments, but it still faces some opposition in Congress due to heavy lobbying. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, what is the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society?
Yeah, so the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is an organization that's built around the needs of cancer patients and specifically those with a blood cancer. So it's about 1.7 million Americans, and we're just trying to fight for changes that are going to help their lives, their families' lives, and then really similar folks who struggle with chronic conditions or other, you know, needs from the healthcare system.
Okay. What's the proposed legislation that would affect cancer patients?
So this bill that would really improve the lives and certainly save some money for cancer patients, it's called the Lower Cost, More Transparency Act. It was passed in the U.S. House last December, about a year ago, and you know, Congress is facing a few more weeks of this Congress left to pass it and into law, get it to the president's desk. And we're excited about that idea because it has provisions in it that would save Medicare patients and the Medicare taxpayers significant amounts of money, and so make care more accessible for all types of folks.
Okay, so why is there pushback against this act?
Yeah, so we see a lot of lobbying by kind of the big corporate hospital systems that are right now exploiting a loophole in the Medicare payment system. That loophole allows a corporate hospital to buy up an independent doctor's office, change the nameplate on the door, and call it a hospital. And then patients have to then pay more for the care that happens at that same site just because the name is different. Everything else could be the same. So this is a, you know, reform that would actually flip that around and make sure that patients could pay less, that taxpayers could pay less. And so it's facing some significant opposition from some of those bigger hospital systems.
How much could seniors with cancer or other chronic conditions expect to save if it did go through?
Yeah, so we did an analysis of folks who have a number of conditions. Certainly blood cancer was one of them. And so folks with a certain type of blood cancer could save over $1,000, around $1,200 in a year based on this savings. Also, we looked at how much folks could save who have breast cancer and COPD and multiple sclerosis. Patients with multiple sclerosis could save upwards of $4,000 a year. So there's really tremendous savings that could be found in this idea that we need to pay the same amount for the same routine service, regardless of where it is or who owns the building.
Okay, and that's site-neutral payments?
That's right. We call it site-neutral because essentially the site who owns it shouldn't really matter. It should be paying the same amount for the same quality of service, regardless of who owns the building or the office.
Okay, so how do site-neutral payments impact the overall healthcare system in general?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is this idea that hospitals are rewarded for buying these independent doctor's offices. And doctors who have been working with us are rewarded by higher payments from that hospital. We see that has led to hospitals buying up all the independent doctor's offices. So we have fewer and fewer, you know, standalone physician-owned clinics out there. And so there's fewer places the patients can go where they can pay less. And just more and more and more hospital ownership of these doctor's offices and more higher costs for patients.
Okay, so if the Lower Cost, More Transparency Act was passed by Congress over the next few weeks, hospitals could no longer keep buying up independent doctor's offices?
Yeah, so if they were to purchase that doctor's office, they would still be allowed to do that. But this kind of payment loophole would be closed so that when the hospital purchases that doctor's office, they wouldn't be able to charge Medicare more or charge the patient more just because they're a hospital. They would be charging the same amount that the doctor's office had been charging before, because essentially all the care would be of the same quality and same underlying cost.
Does this reform have bipartisan support, or is it party specific?
Yeah, this reform is one of the most bipartisan things actually out there for Congress. The U.S. House passed this bill in December of last year by 320 votes. So it had the vast majority of Republicans and the vast majority of Democrats who are supporting it. So we take that as a huge push in the right direction. And we think that's what makes this one of the few things left kind of on the bill for Congress that Congress could actually get across the finish line this year.
Okay. So what exactly needs to happen over the next few weeks in order to get the Lower Cost, More Transparency Act passed?
Well, really, I think members of Congress in the House and the Senate need to hear from folks who are experiencing high healthcare costs, who want their costs to go down and not up. So we're encouraging folks to get in touch with their member of Congress, with their U.S. senators, to tell them, like, this is an important change. Site neutral payments is something that needs to pass, needs to be changed and passed to law so that we can actually see these lower costs.
Okay, so where can listeners go for more information or to make their voices heard on this issue?
Yeah, I'd encourage folks to go to lls.org/site-neutral. That's S-I-T-E, neutral. They can learn more about the issue and then can also reach out directly to their members of Congress to make their voice heard.
Perfect. So once again, that website is lls.org/site-neutral, S-I-T-E-N-E-U-T-R-A-L, lls.org/site-neutral. LLS, of course, stands for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So lls.org/site-neutral. And also reach out to your members of Congress and let them know how you feel about this issue as well. So we've been speaking today with Brian Connell. He's the Vice President of Federal Affairs at the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, or LLS. And Brian, I really appreciate you being here and bringing awareness to this issue that I'm sure a lot of people weren't aware of. And you've laid it out for everyone so they can understand what's going on and how to help push through a reform that would help Medicare patients. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Cancer can feel like something we can't do anything about, but you can. There are screening tests that can catch cancer early when it may be easier to treat. Begin cervical screening at age 25. At 45, start colorectal and breast screening. At 50, discuss lung screening with a doctor. Find resources for free and low-cost screening at cancer.org/get-screened. This is a public service message from the American Cancer Society.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. The 5th annual Candy Cane House holiday-themed walkthrough event to raise funds for HopeLink of Southern Nevada is currently underway, featuring over 80 decorated Christmas trees and 60,000 lights. The Candy Cane House is a free holiday experience in the private residence of Victor Cardenas and Joey Cardona. But of course, donations are strongly encouraged to benefit HopeLink of Southern Nevada and their mission to prevent homelessness, preserve families, and provide hope. Candy Cane House tours are happening Thursdays through Sundays between 6 and 9 p.m., including tonight, every weekend until Christmas, with the final tours on Sunday, December 22nd at 366 South Milan Street in Henderson. That's 366 South Milan Street in Henderson. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party for various local charities. Their 11th anniversary celebration is happening this Monday, December 9th, with doors at 7 p.m. and show at 8 p.m. in the Pearl Concert Theater at the Palms Casino Resort. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. Signs of Hope's annual Night Out fundraising event with a Hope for the Holidays theme is taking place this Wednesday, December 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. inside the Opium Room at Town Nightclub in the Venetian Resort. This year, the nonprofit is honoring community partners that provide vital support to the organization and its mission of providing help, hope, and healing to those affected by sexual violence. Get your tickets at the door or find out more at sohlv.org. That stands for Signs of Hope Las Vegas, sohlv.org. And the 9th annual Holiday Giving Drive to support the Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY, is going on right now. Community support is needed to fulfill thousands of wishes that can give vulnerable youth a brighter holiday season. You can purchase and donate items from the holiday wish list, become a holiday wish sponsor, or take your new unwrapped gift donations directly to the NPHY Drop-In Center at 4981 Shirley Street near UNLV, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. until Monday, December 16th. You can also volunteer at the It's a Wrap Holiday Block Party on Saturday, December 21st from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the NPHY Drop-In Center. Help make holiday cards or sort and wrap thousands of gifts for homeless youth. The outdoor event includes sweet treats, hot chocolate, an ugly sweater contest, and other holiday cheer. Sign up to participate or get more info at nphy.org/holidaygiving. That's nphy.org/holidaygiving.